Mainly a humanoid is something that has human form or characteristics, but it has to be some kind of entity or creature that is not completely human.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Dawn of America!
There are people that think they're enlightened after the encounter. Their eyes have been opened. They've been illuminated, like John Keel used to say. Other people say that they don't want to see that again. They never want to see it again. They're terrified. She couldn't move. Then she saw like an 8-foot tall giant, a man in bright coveralls. Her first thought, for some reason, was a thief. Suddenly, she heard something inside her head that told her, "You think I'm a thief? What did you do with my dog?" She asked furiously. She heard again in her head, "You disturb me as you do now. I could crush you, but I don't want to. Just leave me alone. I'm busy." There's more to this world than what we believe or what we see. I think that's what I conclude. There's more out there. We're not alone on this earth. And I'm not talking about, you know, our animal friends. I'm talking about somebody else is with us. They've been here longer than us. Maybe they think that we're the ones that are intruding here. Who knows?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 8, coming at you after our unexpected and impromptu extended spring break. Never expected that I would be gone for so long. A lot of stuff came up in the last few weeks. I'll tell you more about that at the end of the show, because I have heard your cries and you want some fresh BOA audio. So let's get down to it, my friends. On this edition of the program, we welcome tireless researcher Albert Rosales for a discussion on his extensive chronicling of humanoid encounter reports. In short, basically what a humanoid is some kind of human-esque entity. And as you'll hear over the course of the next 2 hours in this exhaustive conversation, we'll discuss how that simple description, humanoid, takes on many various forms that can be found throughout Albert's work, including the infamous and iconic Greys, Giants, Nordics, Bigfoot, aquatic creatures, robots, and so many other variations on the humanoid form. We'll cover all of those different types of humanoids that have been reported over the years and detailed in Albert's work. Additionally, we'll hear some very dark tales of nefarious encounters with humanoids where dire outcomes afflicted the witnesses who spotted these entities. Beyond all that, we will talk about trends in humanoid reports and speculate on the big picture meaning behind this strange phenomenon. Just when you thought you might have a handle on the UFO enigma and the passengers of those puzzling flying saucers, enter the humanoid encounter phenomenon, which really just tears the fabric apart on that basic idea. How are there so many different kinds of humanoids out there, and what does it all mean? That's what we're going to explore here on the program with Albert Rosales. Altogether, it is a comprehensive conversation which covers a vast array of aspects surrounding the truly mystifying humanoid encounter phenomenon with a researcher who has compiled a stunning 17,000 plus cases of this puzzling enigma, Albert Rosales. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Albert Rosales, please let me take a moment and provide you with a little background on him. Albert Rosales was born in Santa Clara, Cuba in 1958 and migrated to Spain with his family in 1966. Following that, they migrated to the United States in 1967. After briefly living in the Bronx, his family then moved to Miami, where he has been since 1967. After high school and college, Albert joined the Navy, where he served for 4 years, had 2 med cruises, and earned a top secret clearance. For the last 30 years, he has been working in law enforcement. His work on humanoid encounter cases has been ongoing for the last 10 years and has resulted in a compilation of over 17,000 case files. Albert's work can be found at ufoinfo.com/humanoid. Once again, that's ufoinfo.com/humanoid. And with all that said, let's get down to business and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on January 24th, 2014. Albert Rosales, talking about humanoid encounters on BOA Audio Season 8. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 8. I am extremely excited about this conversation I'm about to have with our guest. At times when I am down on the world of UFO research, I find out about somebody that is doing such tremendous work that it really renews my faith in the people who are trying to get to the bottom of this. And that is really the case with our guest here this week. Albert Rosales has done an absolutely breathtaking job cataloging and chronicling humanoid sightings that have been reported over the years since all the way back to, 4780 BC, all the way up to the present time. And in total, as of August 30th, 2013, he had 16,982 cases of humanoid reports and encounters. So, I mean, think about that, folks. Just pause for a moment on that. 16,982, and that was as of August, so I'm sure he's already crossed the 17,000 mark easily by now. And that's just amazing stuff. And not only that there are so many cases like that and encounters and reports, but that he's managed to put all this stuff together in such a tremendous website. You can find that at ufoinfo.com, and if you really want to dig into the humanoid aspect of his work, just put a slash and put humanoid there right after ufoinfo.com. Just an amazing amount of work. Really, my hat's off to you, sir. Like I said, you restored my faith in UFO research. There are good folks out there doing just tremendous work, and you are one of them, and I cannot wait to dig into this subject with you. So welcome to the program, Albert Rosales.
All right, thank you, Tim, and thanks for having me. I'm trying to do my my little part on the on solving this cosmic puzzle, but I don't know if there's ever going to be an answer, but I'm trying my best.
Dude, you're doing awesome. I'm without words to express just how tremendous this catalog is. I cannot believe it. As I was saying to you before we started the show, originally going into this, I was like, oh, just pick out some of the best cases. And then as I'm looking at the website, I'm clicking through here, and he has it broken, you have it broken down, by year, beginning in 1935. Prior to that, it's sort of in larger chunks. But let me just give an example for folks. Let's just pick, I was born in 79, so I'll pick, I click on 1979. It loads up a PDF file here that is 195 pages. 195 pages of just reports of humanoid encounters and sightings, for 1979. That's stunning. You have an amazing amount of stuff on here. You are such an unsung figure. Why aren't more people talking about this stuff? It's amazing.
You know, I don't know. I've been doing this like for years now, and I started it and doing the specific humanoid encounters and entity encounters maybe 89, 90. And from there, I haven't stopped. I had a lot of ups and downs, but I haven't, you know, I've been reluctant to do a lot of interviews, and I just do what I do, and I try to chronicle everything that I can find, every encounter, and I'm just hoping that it will help somebody in the future to, I don't know,
but I feel like I have to do this.
There you go. Okay, well, we usually start out with the bio, the background, and I've already been gushing and raving here about you, so let's find out more about who Albert Rosales is. You know, what drew you to the UFO phenomenon, and specifically, because you say on the page there, you say, I always felt that the study of the humanoid itself was more important than any other study, such as trace cases or some of the other aspects of UFO research, the specialization. So, you know, tell us about what got you interested in UFOs, and then in turn, what made you really sort of focus in on the humanoids?
Well, ever since I was a kid, I grew up in Cuba. I immigrated to the United States in '67, but I had several encounters when I was a child, which back then I didn't know what to make of them. I didn't know what UFOs were or what I had seen. Later on in life, I began reading books about the subject. I was attracted to them immediately, and I went to the library, local library, school library, and I was made fun of and poked fun at by my peers and other students. As a matter of fact, they used to call me the Martian in high school, believe it or not. Well, but I the first books that I read were like Jacques Ballet, Passport Magonia.
Mm-hmm.
That got me started with the humanoids. And then the humanoids, but Donald Hamlin, the editor of Flying Saucer Review. And after that, I started collecting cases. I was in the Navy, and while I was there, I started off with collecting all cases, but then I realized it was just too much. And I just concentrated on what I thought was more important, which was what's inside a UFO? Who's controlling the UFOs? The humanoids, or the entities, or whatever you want to call them. And I started collecting those cases. I used all kinds of sources. Later on, when the advent of the internet, my research just blew up. I had resources or sources from worldwide, you know, Ukraine, Greece, you name it, Brazil, Argentina, everywhere.
It's stunning. The sheer breadth of the stuff you've got on there. It's funny you say you started just collecting every case, and that got to be too much. But now you've got 17,000 humanoid cases. So clearly,
I started handwriting the stuff. I didn't have a computer or a laptop or anything like that. I would write notes, just like I imagine Charles Fort did back in the 1930s.
Yeah,
and I had a whole stack of notes of cases. Then I finally got a computer, and here we are. So I got more than 17,000 cases now. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I presume so. You were like right on the cusp on that August update. Now, I guess to bring people up to speed and to sort of kick off the discussion on the humanoids, I guess sort of define for me, you know, what qualifies for you and for this project as a humanoid?
Mainly a humanoid is something that has human form or characteristics, but it has to be some kind of entity or creature that does not completely human.
Okay.
Anomalous or something that is encountered in relation to a UFO or not. I mean, most of these cases are like what you call entities in type E, which are entities encounter or humanoids encounter without the presence of a UFO or craft. And they're not necessarily human form. There's a whole slew of type of creatures.
Yeah.
You have your Hollywood gray, and you have, the Nordic so-called top, you know, the tall, blonde hair ones. Reptilians, but there's more than that. It's just a whole. If you go through my website, there's most of the cases. They're not exactly a humanoid reported. They're not exactly the same. It's incredible.
Right. Yeah. It's. I could you even venture to guess how many different types of entities, you know, are amongst that 17,000?
Well, I imagine that. Amongst the types of like human-like, or maybe the shorter ones, there are different categories, different like here, like humans here on Earth. We have in Europe,
yeah,
the Spanish, the French, the Germans. Maybe that's how they're separated also. I don't know, but I can't even venture to guess how many.
Hmm.
And there are many that I term more like paranormal type in nature, because I do believe there's a paranormal, a paranormal relation here with UFOs. Not all cases, but some cases there's a paranormal connection, which I believe there is.
Now, what do you mean by paranormal in that?
Well, paranormal when there's something, let's say, maybe when there's somebody that is playing with a Ouija board and something comes through,
mm-hmm.
the Ouija board and tells him to go outside, that he will see a UFO or a light or an entity. There are cases that people have been playing around with a Ouija board, and they've been told to go to a certain location, and they have had encounters. And then there are cases in which an entity is seen that is really hard to determine if this entity is a spirit or a ghost or some kind of a humanoid.
Hmm.
There are many cases, and sometimes there are poltergeist activity related to encounters with humanoids. Or even with Bigfoot-type creatures. I tend to include a lot of the Bigfoot-type encounters into my humanoid catalog.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. It seems like, so to hone in a little bit more on the definition part of it, to get an understanding of this. So even if, so if someone has an odd encounter with something that they don't think, for example, I was reading one from the website about the strange small woman who was curled up at the bus stop in, I think it was Hollywood, Florida.
Hollywood, Florida.
Right.
Okay.
There was no UFO in that story. So it's not necessarily that there doesn't have to be a UFO connection for them to, quote-unquote, like, make the catalog, if you will.
Right, right. As long as the entity is anomalous or unhuman-like, like, let's say, like the recent reports of, I don't know, you probably have heard of these black-eyed kids.
Hmm.
Case.
Yeah, we've done shows on them. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't really included too many of those in my catalog, but there are some. I had a lot of people contact me reporting encounters like that, and they're kind of weird. They're kind of eerie.
Yeah, they're more than kind of weird. They're
the only thing I can tell them when they ask me, what do I do if I see them again, Albert, they come to my door, I go, don't let them in. Don't open the door. Just lock your door and don't just try to ignore them. Hopefully it'll go away.
So we've established sort of that the UFO is not the prerequisite to be a part of this whole thing. Now, what about instances from the 50s and 60s of the contactees? Do you include that sort of under the umbrella of the presumably it would be, but I know also that it's a whole different side issue in genre, if you will.
I try to include everything I can. I want to document everything. Contactees, abductees. I mean, unless it's really an outright hoax, or I don't put it in there. Something that's maybe somebody that's trying to, I had people call me up or send me emails. I could tell right away this. But I try to include all the cases like from the 50s, the known contactees. I include them because I like to document everything that's out there.
Exactly. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I see you. Now, it's interesting, too, when you're dealing with this sort of thing, and I noticed you do, obviously, like you said, you're just putting it all out there.
Right.
There's a difficult sort of scenario, in a sense, because when you look way back, a lot of this stuff gets conflated with religious events.
Very much, yeah. A lot of the Marian apparitions, or the Virgin Mary apparitions, Holy Mother apparitions, are very similar to UFO events. There's reports out of Brazil and people encountering female type entities, very similar to a virgin type apparition, but not with the same result. You know what I mean? there wasn't a shrine built, or thousands of people came later and worshipped the site or anything like that. But it was just an encounter with, a female that it resembled a sort of a Virgin Mary type entity.
Strange. This is like from more recent times?
I had some cases in the 80s.
Yeah.
In Brazil. And many of these, in Cuba also, there were cases of somebody encountering something that he interpreted it as a Virgin Mary type apparition. So it was a female entity wearing a blue cloth, some type of a belt, gold belt. But there wasn't no message imparted or anything like that. Nothing was communicated. So
yeah.
he interpreted it as such. So I include all such type of encounters in my catalog.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just interesting too. Kind of like as what I was saying a little bit previous, that as you look at the early cases, I guess the better way to put it would be, the Bible's full of humanoid encounters. I mean, it's chock full of humanoid encounters when you really get down to it, to the basics of humans interacting with some kind of off, non-human entities.
Definitely, the angels reported in the Bible. It's funny, but none of the angels that the Bible spoke or wrote about are described as having wings. None. I mean, they were just reported as angels, but no, they were never reported as winged. Then in the Middle Ages, the artists, they portrayed angels as being winged or having wings.
Hmm.
Now, but in the Bible, some of the angel visitations, like when Sodom and Gomorrah,
mm-hmm.
the angels that visited Gomorrah were described as like shiny creatures, kind of glowing, but men-like, and they were not described as having wings. And nowadays, we do have a lot of, creatures or men-like creatures with wings, so a lot of flying humanoids has been lately one of the most common encounters. I don't know why.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, flying humanoids is a whole other thing. It's remarkable that the humanoid concept can encompass so much different stuff. I mean, we're talking about Bigfoot's aliens, the contactee experiences, just straight up abductions. It's like we're dealing with a whole menagerie of stuff here under one umbrella. So I can see why you've got so much material.
I don't include all the Bigfoot or encounters. I include the ones that I think are more, high strength, like Bigfoot communicating with a witness. Mental telepathy has been reported many times. Or some of the encounters in Pennsylvania back in 73, which a UFO was seen and almost in relation to UFO landings or sightings. Those are the Bigfoot sightings I include.
Yeah, the big wave there. I think it was Stan Gordon wrote the book.
Stan Gordon, he did a hell of a job of covering that.
Yeah, yeah, that was a crazy time. Yeah. Now, do you talk a little bit about this, because this is definitely in the notes here. There's one thing I want to ask you about. Talk about these sort of instances of communication that happen and what kind of – I'm sure it's just so varied that it's hard to really pin down anything. But, what's sort of the nature of the communication in these encounters when they happen?
Very, but in the 80s, late 80s and 90s, 91 through the night, through all the 90s, there was a large UFO wave in Eastern Europe. That was mm-hmm. the same time when the Iron Curtain fell apart. And many encounters dealt with messages given to the witnesses. And a lot of these messages dealt with future Earth changes, global warming, increase of earthquakes, volcanoes, and most of them were over an environmental, message.
Yeah.
That's mainly the theme there. Coming world, earth changes, nature, the humans, how we are treating our planet, that we have to change our ways. I have cases like that in Puerto Rico, Panama, and a lot in Eastern Europe. like a warning. We've been warned many times.
Right, that goes back to the contactee stuff too. It's a recurring message of get your act right or something.
It is, and many of them are say, well, yeah, they give you a date, but you know it never happens. But some of these encounters in the 90s in Eastern Europe, they gave dates like 2014, 15, 16, you know, coming up. So,
uh-oh.
We keep our fingers crossed here. We'll see what happens.
Oh, yikes. I see. I didn't know that. That's spooky. Now, as far as the Eastern European ones go, were these like, what were the entities that they were communicating with? Were these classic ETs or what?
Most of the, it's funny, a lot of the entities reported in Ukraine, Russia, Eastern Europe, were like tall humanoids. Many of them were men-like, tall.
Mm-hmm.
Very few instances that I have on my records, you know, my files that I know of, with my sources in Eastern Europe, there have been cases of little gray-type creatures. There has. I'm not saying there hasn't. But most of the cases reported in Eastern Europe, Russia, back in the 90s,
yeah,
were human-like creatures, tall.
Weird.
Many Nordic type, but like the landings there in Barishness in 89, the creature were tall, and some of them were robot-like, but nothing like we get a lot here in the States, or, you know, the gray type humanoid.
So it seems like the grays are maybe a predominantly American phenomenon, perhaps?
Well, I could say that, but it's not really true. There's been reports of gray-type creatures in other countries also.
Mm, yeah.
But not as much as the U.S. I don't know why the predominance here of gray-type encounters.
Interesting.
I'm not saying there. Maybe there Hollywood has to do with it, because we get bombarded with movies, you know, with gray-type humanoids. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
absolutely.
The recent movie, what was the name? Bob. And E.T. and Close Encounters and, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We've been
Taken.
We've been inundated with that stuff, yeah.
Right.
Well, how much do you think, I guess, now you say on the page that you take these stories at face value. And I don't necessarily, you know, clearly of the 17,000, it would be interesting. I guess you would never know until you go off to the next level of life or whatever, the percentages are of hoaxes, mistaken cases, or stuff like that. But I mean, I guess, like, where do you think this comes from? I mean, obviously we're speculating about off-world entities, ETs, but clearly there's got to be something else at hand here for this sheer variety.
Well, you know, I don't know about off-world, maybe, yeah, but I think there's more like an interdimensional level here that we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Other dimensions, other realms, that at times there's an opening that something or somebody gets through, and there's an encounter or there's some kind of interaction. Or maybe they use wormholes or other dimensional pathways to travel, you know, but it seems like it's just too many. I had other researchers tell me that, well, if you go back to 4000 BC to 2014 or 13, 17,000 of them doesn't sound that much. maybe not, but I don't know. My own belief is that it's more like an maybe other dimensional entities that are, you know, interacting with us.
Right, exactly. It does.
Well, and you know, with using UFOs, I'm not saying that there's not an extraterrestrial connection. I think there is. I think there's maybe a UFO or maybe alien bases and some of our other planets here in our solar system, maybe the moon, maybe Mars.
Yeah.
That's what I believe.
Exactly. I mean, we could be, you know, we were using the classification humanoid, but we could be, that could be akin to saying, like, dog, where, you know, the ETs are pit bulls and elves are poodles, you know, it's, there could be all different sorts of things going on here.
All different types of breeds.
Exactly.
You say you were born in 79. I have 335 cases for that year. I call the 70s the high strangeness decade, starting in like 1971. It's just like it was out of control. It was up to 1979. It was just incredible.
What do you think?
Amount of cases.
What do you think was the cause of that? Because there's also this sort of thing going on in the scene at that time too. That there was sort of an explosion of peripheral stuff. You know, interest in crop circles, cattle mutilations, abductions. That all sort of came to the fore. I mean, it had been around before that, but it came sort of into the consciousness of people looking at this stuff in that decade, too. So it seems like it was quite an awakening period for everybody.
Especially starting the fall of 73. Something went down, something happened, and it's sort of an awakening. You're right. A lot of like latter-day, if you will, latter-day contactees. Like back in the 50s, the contactees were like, celebrities. They were like, they will travel all over the world visiting other countries. But we have other contacts that are more like what John Keel used to call them, silent contactees. We had a lot of those in the 70s and even the 80s. I see like in early 80s it was a slowdown. Still got my catalog in early 80s. It kind of slows down and it shoots up incredibly in 89.
Yeah, I noticed that. There's some interesting, let me see if I can find that. Yeah, here, the totals by decades was pretty remarkable, cause there's some years that really stand out where, 1990, 595, the previous year, 500, and then the year before that, 261 for 88. So almost more than double 88's total in 1990. Now, what do you attribute that too, because perhaps better reporting? Because you get these, let's circle back a little bit, because I want to know how you get all this stuff in the first place. Like 17,000 cases, is this like you get a UFO book and you're looking through it and then you find there's a story and you haven't had it yet, so you put it in the catalog?
Well, that, books, magazines, newsletters, but what happened in 1989, the Iron Curtain came down and all the information started coming out of Eastern Europe, information like that we never heard like before.
Hmm.
The landing in Borisov, and then we have all the researchers in Russia that have been there all the time, Poland, Romania, they started coming out with all their cases. We never heard about these cases because they were, you know, behind the Iron Curtain, and a lot to do with the language, which a lot of these cases were never translated before, and there were hundreds of cases. I had a connection in the Ukraine that he will send me, he would translate the cases for me, and he will send me dozens of cases a week, but I will send them like a package with 10 or 15 books from the U.S. He wanted books. They wanted books over there because they didn't have the books, but they had like cases. They were like inundated with cases, especially in starting in 89 through the 90s.
Now, what was
slow down? Yeah, go ahead.
It sounds like you got an interesting connection there with these folks. Like, what was their, were they as befuddled by all this as we are, or had they come to any sort of not necessarily conclusions, but did they have any sort of like pet theories on what this was all about?
Well, over there is like, there seems to be more open-minded to, and there seems to be more, scientific interest in Eastern Europe. A lot of these people had a connection to universities and different institutions over there. But as far as conclusions, a lot of the researchers I was, in contact with, a lot of them thought they were, extraterrestrial, a lot, most of them are extraterrestrial, and some of them not, some of them thought they were more like I was mentioning earlier, other dimension, interdimensional or whatever, even subterranean species. But most of the thinking there is extraterrestrial.
Okay.
Unlike many of the researchers in other parts of Europe.
Okay, so yeah, so it almost kind of mirrors the American perspective on this as well.
Yes, true. What is your birth date in 79? See if I have a case for your date.
It's January 26th, 1979.
That was a very busy month, 79.
Oh, boy.
January 26th it was. Let me see if I have anything there. Yeah. Very busy month. Got 24th, 24, 25. I got 25. And then he jumps to 28. Sorry.
Oh. That's all right.
There.
Well, it's just amazing. Like I said, the sheer amount of stuff on there. Again, it's really hard to ask you about, to sort of put a bead on these things, because this is like a list of outliers amongst outliers. It's even more bizarre. But do these encounters generally run along the lines of sort of serendipitous? They seem accidental, I guess is the point I'm trying to make. They seem like more often than not these people are stumbling upon some kind of humanoid rather than, I don't know, the humanoid came to them with the express purpose of seeing them, communicating with them, abducting them, etc.
Well, I think you're right. A lot of them were like inadvertent encounters. People go out camping, or maybe they're out somewhere in the country, or at night they go out for some reason and there's an encounter. But there's also a lot of people that are what I call repeat abductees or repeat experiencers. They have repeated encounters, and these people seem to be somehow chosen or picked to have several encounters. I investigated several local cases, several, and I talked to a lot of people involved cases, and somehow there's people that have encounters all through their lives. And I, you know, since they're children to their, you know, all throughout their adult lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, when you said that you had a UFO encounter, that was crazy enough. But if you told anybody that you had several encounters, that they would brand you as a nut right away. It didn't happen. Now is a very common thing that somebody says, I've been involved in a UFO encounter, and they already had several already.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. There's a sort of a mixed bag on this. In some corners, it's okay if you come out with these sort of instances, but also I'm sure there's got to be a widespread, at least here in America, sort of a societal taboo against this. You know what I mean? If someone is having encounters with a humanoid, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I mean, you have 17,000 cases here. The actual number of such events may be triple that, just from the people who wouldn't ever tell you that it happened to them.
I have many instances of people contact me at first, and they say, I need to tell you something that happened to me. I go, sure. It will be confidential. If you want to, I'll add it to my database, and you will be anonymous. And they say yes, but they never contact me again. I guess they're afraid.
Yeah.
Or they don't want, you know. And, you know, it's like back in the Middle Ages, people that, all those people that were burned at the stake because they were accused of being witches. Because they claimed they encountered the devil or encountered goblins or whatever. God knows. And, you know, thank God we're not living back in the Middle Ages, because that could happen to the UFO witness.
Yeah, I hasten to say, but I bet you in some countries, I don't want to say which countries, because I'll probably get nasty emails, but I'm sure in some countries, if you had a humanoid encounter even today, you'd be branded a heretic or a lunatic.
Or a UFO encounter, yeah, any kind of anomalous encounter. You're right, yeah.
So,
I mean, in South America, they're very much more open.
Right.
To that. Even in Europe, Eastern Europe. Asia, Middle East, not so much. But especially in the Middle East, there, I don't know, but even though I got cases, a lot of cases from there, India, it feels like it should be a lot more cases from there, but I don't have that many.
Yeah.
China, the same thing. I don't know.
Well, perhaps we're dealing, you were talking about the fall of the Iron Curtain. Hopefully, someday, maybe, I feel like there's a wealth of UFO information at hand in China that we don't know about, that hopefully, maybe, someday will come out that we'll be able to all share in. But I don't know. Maybe
I think so,
incorrect. Yeah.
No, you're right.
It seems to be the case, because clearly there's sort of a ring of secrecy around that land, they'd be foolish not to be interested in UFOs. So they're doing something over there, looking at it, I'm sure. It'd be interesting to see what they know. Can you imagine just the sheer size of China? What kind of stuff is there?
Yeah, right, the amount of people there also. And I have tried to contact people there, and then hasn't been easy.
Hmm.
I even contacted people in New Zealand and Japan, all over the world, and Poland, Hungary, Brazil, Argentina. One place I don't have any one case is Albania. I haven't been there. I mean, I only got one case for that. It's a little country, so I guess I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Well, if there's any Albanians listening and you've had a humanoid encounter.
Yeah, give me a – send me a message to my email.
Yeah, get in touch with Albert so we can find out more about this. I wanted to ask you about this because this was really weird. That video, it's from 2007. People can see it on the website. It's from Poland. I'm flummoxed when I look at that video. And I'm stunned that here it is. It's 2014. It's 7 years probably since the video was taken, or six and a half probably. And I'm stunned. I've never even seen this video. It's tremendous. It's just absolutely baffling. You know, tell people about this video and what you make of it.
It was sent to me by a Polish researcher, and at first he didn't want to be known to anybody. It was kind of a hush-hush thing. But then it started coming out in different places, mostly in Europe. Like you see in the videos, it seems like they're laying on the ground there covered with a blanket, and something comes out of the behind some trees or the woods, like a little man or a little creature, and is holding some kind of staff or something. Now, with some of the Polish researchers that I talked to, they're divided. For some reason, there's a couple that think it's a hoax. They didn't tell me why they think that, but a lot of them, the ones that presented the video to me, they vouch for the video. They believe it's a genuine video. He seems to show some kind of a small humanoid. I don't know if it's some kind of like a sprite or a fairy or a leprechaun. I don't know, but it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's very, very weird. At first, I had to watch it a few times. But at first, it looks like someone raking. I thought it was someone raking. I didn't realize there was somebody on the ground there with the blanket. So
there's somebody on the ground with a blanket. I don't know if they even saw anything. I'm not sure. I don't think they saw anything. That there's a dog that seems to be looking around. His ears perk up, but I don't think anybody saw anything.
Right, that seems to be the case because they're acting pretty naturally as it goes on. You know, it's just an inadvertent pickup in the video. You almost wonder if it's like some kind of, like you said about the dimensional shift. You wonder if it's. If it's just not like a, I guess like a supernatural glitch in the camera, if you will, where it somehow for one brief moment just picked up a tiny little moment of another dimension or something. Who knows? It's really weird.
Well, I talked to a lot of people that they believe that maybe there's time travelers involved. I mean, that's further out there. That's kind of hard to believe, but who knows? You know.
Yeah, yeah, time travelers, yeah.
Yeah.
If anything, the time travelers would be the least likely to pop up on the humanoid collective because they'd be the most human of all the entities, so, you know what I mean? It's like, unless they evolved or changed so much that we wouldn't recognize them as humans.
Well, do you remember the 1966, this case is in the humanoid, in the book, The Humanoids, the Eddie Laxon encounter in 1966. When this guy is a, he said like a mechanic, and he sees an object on the ground that, that looks like a metallic fish. And then, out of some guy walks out of the object that looks like he, according to this guy, he looked like a normal Air Force guy. Dressed up like in some kind of uniform, and he was like kind of checking around the object. I don't know if you ever heard of that report.
No, I never heard this story.
Never? If you look at 1966 in my catalog,
mm-hmm.
Let me see if I find it for you. Some people think that it might be...
time traveler?
Not a time traveler. I don't know. Maybe some kind of a Earth technology. That has been being kept hidden. A lot of people claim that a lot of the UFOs are
like black budget projects.
Yeah, black budget. I can't find it right now, but if I do, I'll let you know right away.
Okay, yeah. So, all right. So we're also talking about instances here where there's, you know, I guess humans involved with UFOs, they would fall under the humanoid category in a sense too. So,
well, there's many cases in which people encounter UFOs and their occupants, and the occupants are like a mixed breed, humans, short grays, and other types of creatures.
Hmm.
Many cases like that. I find those cases very high strange and very interesting cases.
Now, beyond the environmental warnings of these communications, are there ever instances where the entity like knows the person? You know, where it's like, hey, Albert, you don't know me, but I know you. I'm E.T., that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, there are a lot of people that say that, hey, do you remember me? Do you know who I am? I had a guy in Spain that said the entity is something very tall wearing a black cloth, like a hood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, told him, you know who I am. You don't remember me, but you know who I am. And this guy had no idea who was seeing. He was like totally freaked. And this entity led him to an object, and he doesn't remember much. But whatever it was, had told him that he knows who he was, but he just didn't remember him.
That's strange. That speaks to the whole idea of like people being abducted as kids and then they come back later. You wonder if that's what the entity was talking about. Like maybe the guy was abducted when he was a kid and he just doesn't remember it.
That's what I don't know. Maybe that's what I'm thinking. There's other cases too. In March 23, 1966. If you look at at the 1966 catalog,
mm-hmm.
March 23. This guy is driving to work before dawn, and he came upon a brightly lit metallic object blocking the highway ahead of him. It was a fish-shaped hull, ten to twelve foot high, 75 feet long, maybe resting on stilts. A central door was open with steps and very bright lights. There was a curved antenna on the top. There was a tail on the back with a porthole. And he saw a couple, an inscription on the hull that was totally like human type inscription, like T, like in Tom, L, and then some numbers. It's there in the report. And he said he saw a man kneeling next to the object. And he looked like he was wearing a sort of an Air Force uniform with a peak cap and a chevron insignia resembling that of a master sergeant. Now he got out of the car, he ran toward the object, then turned to get his camera, of course. But meanwhile, the guy went back inside the object and took off vertically, emitting a sound like an electric drill, and took off very fast. And he wasn't able to photograph it, but this case was investigated apparently by Dr. James McDonald.
Oh, wow.
The late, yeah. And this is weird because it shows that this whatever that was, the occupant was completely human type.
I'm telling you, man, the thing is amazing. I think you could spend like a 40-hour week just trying to get through the whole website and still would be have only made a scratch into it. So, I mean, like I said, kudos to you. It's interesting. Have you ever I'm sure you're kind of aware of the of what happened in ufology, where it was like they didn't want to deal with humanoids for a long time. I think APRO was the ones who would deal with UF without humanoids, but NICAP was like, no, no, we don't do humanoids.
APRO was the only one that originally took the humanoid reports seriously at the beginning.
Right.
Not even the one, and they only started that like in the late 50s. At the beginning, any humanoid report or most of them that Blue Book got a hold of, they discarded. So God knows how many cases were like lost forever. And a lot of the cases that were called into NICAP, they were originally they completely disregarded those also. Yeah,
that's amazing. Why do you think, you know, on a human level, why do you think that happened?
I think it was too strange for them.
Yeah,
I think they were not ready for it. They were totally. I mean, they had enough with UFOs. Now they had something inside. I mean, out of the UFO, they couldn't deal with it. That's what I think. I don't know.
Now, obviously, this isn't a critique of you and the stuff, so bear with me on this. But why do you think we don't have any like physical evidence of this, of any of these encounters, whether it be, you know, photographs or films, aside from that 2007 one? I mean, maybe there are photographs, and I just didn't get to them because the material is so dense on the website. But I mean, why do you think considering there's so many cases, why do you think we have a sort of a lack of anything particularly tangible beyond the testimony of the witnesses?
Well, there are photographs, but they're very hard to locate, and many of them are people just either don't want to believe they're real. But there are photographs of supposed entities. And I don't know if you heard of that video that was taken in Turkey in 2007 or 8, security guard. I haven't even included that because I'm not too, I'm on the fence on that one. But, I think we have more evidence that we tend to really say that we do. If you believe a lot of researchers, and I'm one of them, I think that maybe that some branch in the government has more evidence that they are willing to share, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe a lot of the evidence that's been collected, a lot of them has been taken away by certain parties. A lot of people said that they had a photograph or some kind of piece of evidence, and either something happened that evidence was lost or stolen, something happened to it. But right now, I think there's a lot of legitimate photographs out there already.
Mm.
Of, I'm not saying that they're spaceships, but they're unidentified flying objects, even videos. Maybe you're right. Maybe that we should have more evidence, but for some reason, maybe the UFOs did not allow us to have all the evidence. I don't know.
Well, like in the instances of these humanoid encounters too, like we were talking about, they seem often accidental. So if I was like walking through the park and I ran across a gnome, and then he ran away. There's really no way for me to document it other than what I saw on set. You know,
it would only be what you say you saw.
Right.
So, you know, what kind of evidence is that? That's, you know, hearsay or, but a lot of people claim that they've been on board, like even Betty and Barney Hill, that when they claimed that they wanted to take a book on board, they saw the UFO with them, and they told them that they couldn't have it.
Hmm.
The guy in Brazil, Bias Boas, the guy that was made to, he was made to have sexual relations with the female alien. He tried to steal something that he found that he said he looked like a clock or a small clock, but they took it away from him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just hard to have some kind of substantial evidence.
Well, how about this? I mean, this is a purely American phenomenon in a way.
Okay.
What about, do we have any instances of people shooting these things?
Many, many instances. And you're right. A lot of them, most of them are here in the United States.
Right.
But there are some other places with bad consequences to the person that shot the, in Brazil especially, we have cases where this guy shot at in a place called Pilar de Goes, 1967. And it was a UFO that landed in a runway. It's an old runway in the middle of the jungle. And this guy came out of his shack with armed with a rifle. He shot. There were some figures running around the object. There were, he said they were tall, bald-headed men. He took a shot at him, and something shot out of the UFO, like a beam of light. I think he said it was green or something. It struck him, knocked him down, and he fell kind of. And then this guy was dead within a week.
Oh my God!
Some kind of cancer that just started at a high rate, and it couldn't be controlled. And there was another case in Cuba. A military guard. He saw an object that he looked like a helicopter, but it was not a helicopter. It was oval shaped, and it had a beam of light, and he fired at it. Boom! He was struck in the head by some kind of light. Five days later, he woke up in the hospital. He didn't die, but he was out cold for 5 days.
Yeah.
There's many cases. In the U.S., there's a lot of cases of people shooting at them without asking any questions first.
That's why I say, yeah, it's an American phenomenon. Yeah, just got to unleash George Zimmerman.
You know, I wouldn't do that. You know, right. But I wouldn't do that. If I see something like that up close, I don't know if I would try to approach it. I would be very careful. I wouldn't run to it, that's for sure. I have my own experiences. I have a little article on that. I didn't include everything there, but I have my own experiences. But I just warn people not to take an aggressive stance. Don't shoot at something that you don't know what it is. Yes, because you don't know what it is. Something. Yes. Use caution.
Right. Exactly. That's words to live by for sure. Yeah. Well, it stands to reason that there's something about these entities that even if you shot them, it doesn't seem to make a difference because we don't have any dead. As far as we know, I mean, there could be a story like you're saying about them taking away evidence. I mean, somebody somewhere could have shot an alien, and the government could have just come and taken the alien and probably taken them. You know what I mean? And that's the last you heard of, your cousin Marty or something. So who knows what has happened? But as far as we know, there's no instances of somebody like shooting an entity and having it.
No. Maybe people have claimed that, but it's been, outright hoaxes.
Right.
I know there's a case that was investigated by Leonard Stringfield,
mm-hmm.
the late Leonard Stringfield out of Fort Dix, New Jersey. According, I don't know if you heard of this case. In January 78, there was a couple of MPs patrolling the perimeter, and there was a little alien or a little figure that ran across, and they yelled at it to halt. They shot at it, and apparently they hit it. And it fell, and then there was something, an object showed up and picked up the bean or the human or whatever and took off. This happened in 78. It's in the summary there, in Fort Dix, New Jersey.
Weird.
Right. And according to to Stringfield, the men told him that they thought that whatever it was, they thought it was dead. So,
right, but who knows what they, who knows what they could do when they picked it up, the craft or whatever.
I'm sorry, it wasn't Fort Dix, it was McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey, and January 18, 1978, and it's there in the January summaries, if you want to read it.
Mm.
Pretty long summary.
Nice. So do you, how many reports would you say you get nowadays just from, you've been doing the website since 96, I think you said, so how long, you must get reports all the time now from people.
Excuse me. I'm getting a lot of them from people that contact me, email. I know better not to get my phone out anymore. I had some really, I don't know if they were doing it on purpose, but there were some really crazy people calling me. But the latest email, I got a lady in Arkansas. She sounded very concerned and serious. I contacted her a couple times. And she and her daughter, but it didn't happen this last year. It happened in 2011 in Arkansas. I got the name of the town. I forget, but I haven't included it yet. But
mm-hmm.
They were mining from, they had gone rock hunting in an old Indian mound, they call it. And when they arrived, her daughter looked up and said, "Look, Mom, it looks like a witch." A witch. And she looked up and she said it was like a shiny figure that seemed to be like descending over them. It seemed to be winged, but it was shiny and it appears to be like, it wasn't solid, she said. It appears to be like a jelly. It seemed to be moving and it descended over them and they ran into the house and whatever it was. I'm still trying to get more information on that, but it was very interesting. She thought it had to do something with the,
with the mound?
Yeah, but she said she found some kind of, artifact there and then, she brought them home.
Oh, Jesus, don't do that.
I told her that whatever it was, she should bring it, take it back.
Yeah, yeah.
Because maybe she disturbed something. You know what I mean? That's what I, you know, maybe that's a paranormal type of entity. I don't know.
Now, when you hear from people who've encountered the entities, what's their mood? Because I think it's important to look at the witnesses, too, in a sense. Like, what is the effect on their lives? Are they frightened? Are they angry? Do they feel more enlightened? Has their mind opened? You know, what do you get any sort of sense about how these experiences affect the witnesses?
A lot of people feel like their life has changed. They're not going to look at a life the way they used to before ever again. Everything has changed. Now they know that we're not alone, per se, that there's something out there that's unexplainable. They feel change. Now there are other people that have more negative encounters, which, you know, I've talked to a family from Australia has some very negative encounters, and they feel like they're being pursued or attacked by some type of beings. You know, thankfully there's less negative encounters than positive encounters. But, you know, it runs the gamut. There are people that think they're enlightened after the encounter. Their eyes have been opened. They've been illuminated, like John Keel used to say.
Mm-hmm.
Other people say that they don't want to see that again. They never want to see it again. They're terrified.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah. Yes, frightening. Now, what for the family in Australia? What was the experience? What was tormenting them?
It's a place called Bulls Brook. I think it's Queensland. I'm not too sure. I don't have it right in front of me right now. But they're especially the daughter, a teenager, and a friend. They were getting visits at night. Some kind of entity, seemed to be a cloaked entity that will float into their room. And then they will scream, they would hide under the blankets, and then they would wake up in the morning with scratches on their bodies.
Oh, God.
They were like, you know, it was pretty weird. And they, you know, I try to tell them, why did you contact me? I'm here isn't there somebody in Australia that can help you?
Yeah.
I know there are investigators there. And I try to give them a couple of names and emails. But they kept contacting me, and I kept trying to give them, you know, advice on what to do. I think the last contact I had with them was in last year. But they kept getting, like, repeated encounters with this kind of weird entity that will visit their daughter and her daughter's friend at their house.
That's
and it was
strange.
Kind of, it was pretty negative.
Yeah.
They said it was a cloaked thing that would float into the room. They felt some kind of negative aura coming from it.
Hmm.
Even perhaps evil, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to say that, but, you know, maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. For some people, these are angels, and for some, they're demons. It's...
Yes, yes. Like I said, a different, either depends on the type of encounter you have.
When the Sox and Celtics and Patriots or Bruins are champions again, to the chagrin of New York and Chicago fans, the crowds will gather and watch a parade go down Boylston Street. And this time next year, on the third Monday in April, the world will return to this great American city to run harder than ever and to cheer even louder for the 118th Boston Marathon. Bet on it.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
This is our fucking city. And nobody gonna dictate our freedom. Stay strong. Thank you.